fallout from the Senate GOP tax bill vote. The State Board of Education changes graduation requirements. That plus Mike Braun, secret Democrat, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending December 8th, 2017.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the ripple effects in advocacy and ads following the vote last week to approve the $1 trillion Senate tax overhaul bill.
The Senate tax bill lowers the corporate rate from 35% down to around 20% and doubles the standard deduction for taxpayers. It also eliminates several popular personal deductions, raises taxes on the middle class in the next 10 years, and potentially increases the deficit by more than $1 trillion. Indiana Republican Senator Todd Young voted for the measure. Democrat Joe Donnelly, who's up for re-election next year, voted against it. National Republicans and Donnelly's prospective opponents immediately attacked the senior Hoosier senator for his vote. Meanwhile, local advocates rallied outside Todd Young's office this week while ads play on TV urging Young to reverse his position.
Will this bill prove popular when voters go to the polls next fall? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Phil Johnson, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Phil Johnson, it feels like Joe Donnelly took a real risk here with this vote. Will he pay for it next November?
Will he pay for it? In a word, no. Brandon, who will pay for it? Our children and grandchildren. This thing adds $1.5 trillion to the national debt. I remember a time, I'm old enough to remember a time when Republicans were talking about not adding any more to the national debt. Who else will pay for it? Middle class Hoosiers. This thing passed at 2 in the morning and essentially turned in, Mitch McConnell's bill turned into a tax hike on middle class Hoosiers, and it'll be a tax cut for folks making $1 million or more. So will Joe pay for this? No.
It's $1.4 trillion. It's not $1.5 trillion. That doesn't include the economic growth you get from cutting taxes. That is included in the number. There's a net number here.
But Phil just said something. This was the messaging from the Donnelly campaign, so I imagine that wasn't a coincidence, which is it's Mitch McConnell's tax bill. If that messaging is successful, will it turn unpopular in the state of Indiana?
Because it's called Mitch McConnell's
tax bill? If you try to tie it to Mitch McConnell...
I don't think that ever works. I mean, if you try to go two steps down the road for Hoosier for voters and say, well, don't vote for this guy because then this guy will get elected majority leader, that never works. We've tried that in the past with Harry Reid and other things. It's an ineffective message. What will be an effective message, I think, will Joe Donnelly live or die on tax reform? No, but he will live or die, I think, on the broader narrative, which is he's there for you when you don't need him. When you need the 97th vote in the Senate to pass a popular piece of legislation, he's there. When you need the 51st vote to repeal Obamacare or pass regulatory reform or pass tax reform, he's nowhere to be found. So that narrative, I think, is going to be the one that's going to cost him next November.
Voters, we've talked many times about how the short-term memory of voters anymore. We're nearly a year out from the elections. Will tax reform really be on Hoosiers' minds when they go to the polls next fall?
It all comes down to messaging, and that's something we've talked about on this show before. Who has the bully pulpit? Who has the bigger megaphone, if you will? Who has the greater ability to air television spots and radio spots that attack your opponent? That will help tell the tale, and that has a way, of course, of extending voters' memories or maybe giving them memories that they never even had in the first place, fantasies. This is also timing. I feel like a broken record because these are things that we've talked about in the past, but eventually there will be a lot of backlash, I think, for middle-class voters, those who have student loan debt, those who might be in grad school and potentially would be taxed on any waivers of tuition that they receive now, even though they're not on paper, it appears they may be better off than they are as struggling students. There's political cover, as we've talked about before, for those who voted against this by looking at AARP, by looking at other groups that came out against this. It's not as if voting against it at this point is nearly as brave as one might have surmised 6 months ago.
To that point, the messaging, you know, if you look at this might be won or lost in the messaging, so far the messaging doesn't seem to be working for a lot of Republicans if you look at the polling that's been done over the last few days on this. But will that change?
I think the Republicans have the more difficult challenge here in promoting the bill as opposed to the Democrats in saying what's wrong with it. That's typically the case, but here you've got a bill that is different than any other. It's very easy for anybody to say, look, the process has always been have a series of hearings, have experts testify, have everybody, you know, go through the process, and then here's the bill. And that did not happen with this bill. So that's one point that's easy for the opposition to take a hold on. You also have those sheer numbers, many of which we've already talked about here, adding to the deficit. And, oh, by the way, Republicans, you know, you could be 5 years old and be old enough to remember when Republicans were against the deficit. So I think that the Republicans have a much stiffer challenge trying to convince the public this is a good thing than the Democrats do in convincing them it's not.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Senator Joe Donnelly's no vote on the Senate tax bill come back to haunt him in the 2018 election? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, is Representative Terry Gooden the right choice to lead the House Democratic Caucus? 54% say yes, 46% say no. If you would like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, the Indiana State Board of Education voted this week to approve significant changes to high school graduation requirements.
The 7-4 vote came after 6 hours of testimony Wednesday from parents, teachers, principals, and business leaders, the vast majority of whom were opposed to the plan. The changes would require high school students to satisfy 3 requirements to graduate. In addition to meeting high school diploma conditions, students must prove job skills and earn a credential, certificate, or reach a predetermined score set by the state on a standardized test, such as the ACT, military entrance exam, or earn an honors diploma. Critics argue the plan has too many unknowns, including cost. State Superintendent Jennifer McCormick was among those who voted no.
Grab that back. Mike O'Brien, did the State Board take this step a little too quickly, considering how much opposition there was?
I don't think so. We've been talking about this for a long time. You could look at it in the reverse or in the opposite and say we haven't done it fast enough. I mean, one thing that both parties, every leader in the State House agrees on right now is that our young adults who are graduating from high school aren't necessarily ready for post-secondary education. They're not ready with the skills they need to enter the workforce, and we've got to address that. We have 92,000 skilled open jobs right now that we can't fill because we can't find skilled workers to fill them. So this sets them on that path. They also move the deadline a full year. So there's now the rest of this school year, another full school year, and then 2019 will be when this is implemented. We have 2 legislative sessions between now and then, including a budget session. So there were concerns expressed about the money we spend. You know, we have a $32 billion state budget. We spent $17.6 billion of that on K-12 education. So we can figure out how to get the money to these programs as well in that time.
To that point, this isn't going to take place tomorrow. Because of that, is it fine to go ahead with this step the way they did this week?
Anytime you've got the folks that are involved with this, parents and teachers, saying that this isn't a good idea, I think there were hours of testimony from parents and teachers.
And principals and superintendents.
And principals and superintendents, thank you. If an engineer tells me don't cross the bridge, I'm going to listen to him because they know what they're talking about. I think Mike brings up a good point about education funding. That's important. And I think it's also important to remember that we actually spend less on per pupil today than we did in 2009. So we've got to make sure that we put, if you adjust for inflation. So funding schools is a priority, and that's something that, in my opinion, hasn't happened. Is this Indianapolis mandating local schools, putting more rules and regulations? Sure, it looks that way to me. So I think, yes, it's good that they put an extra year in there. I also think this is the same thing that we've been hearing in education policy. You have teachers and parents, key stakeholders, saying we need to put the brakes on this, figure it out, and we forge ahead.
But this additional requirement does give the locals the flexibility to cater it to their community and the needs of their community. What we do have right now is a one-size-fits-all top-down mandate. It says these are the 3 things you need before you can graduate from high school. This at least gives them flexibility to say, cater this new requirement to meet the needs of your community.
John, one of the state board members who voted in favor of this said, called it sort of a visionary plan, and that the details would come later. Is that the way we should be making policy at the State Board of Education?
Well, actually, I don't think it's too far off. I think the Board of Education is a policymaking board, and that implementation probably should come further down, whether it's at the local school district, whether it's at the legislature, whatever the case may be. I think the one thing that is encouraging about this is the recognition of the certifications and the alternative routes for students to progress as they go through high school, and I think that's something that's overdue. But I think we need to have a coordinated effort, and I think that the school, this board's policy making needs to be taken for what it is, and that is essentially what we were talking about. Here's the policy, here are the ideas, now how do we get to implementation?
So to that end, does it almost matter more what the legislature decides to do over the next session or two?
Well, it always matters more what the legislature decides to do, because they have the purse strings and can or fund these things or make them a pipe, you know, an illusion. But the thing that strikes me here, the complaint that was advanced by a lot of the people who offered testimony, is that this is confusing. It's maybe it overlaps with requirements that are already in place, and you know, it just didn't fit together in a logical manner, they would say, which, yeah, you'd expect that. But keep in mind, a few weeks ago on this show, or maybe a few months ago now, we were talking about the governor's push for an overhaul of the way we train our workforce in this state, and about workforce development, the notion being that there were, he never said there were too many cooks in the kitchen. He'd never fall for such a bad cliche that I'm going to use. But there were too many cooks in the kitchen. Is it local? Is it regional? Is it state? Mixed messages. So one could argue that part of getting everybody on the same page would suggest that this is a big piece of it, after all.
Right.
It's hard to have the other part of the job component if you don't have your K 12 education as part of the mix. So it seems to me it might be premature in that sense.
Well, an AP report this week that Republican U.S. Senate candidate Mike Braun took a Democratic ballot in primaries for more than a decade.
Braun, an auto parts distribution magnate and former state representative, voted in the Democratic primaries in DuBois County beginning in at least 1996. That continued through the 2008 primary, which featured the race between Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama at the top of the ticket. The Braun campaign insists he's a lifelong Republican and took Democratic ballots to have the most impact and advance GOP interests. The campaign of Congressman Todd Rokita, one of Braun's primary opponents, wasted no time attacking the Southern Indiana candidate, saying if Braun votes like a Democrat and raises taxes like a Democrat, then he's a Democrat. The tax hike is a reference to the gas tax increase Braun voted for in the State House this year.
John Schwanis, are some Indiana GOP primary voters going to wonder if Braun was a Democrat?
I suppose so, but to what end? I mean, maybe this is a sign of how tribal, I guess, we have become with our politics. You know, it's on my team versus the other team, policy be damned and nuance be damned. And keep in mind that, I mean, being a member of the other party or even voting in a primary, let's just take it halfway here, is not the same as being a convicted of child molestation or something. I mean, keep in mind that he could point out that the
sure.
current president, Donald Trump, the current vice president, Mike Pence, Ronald Reagan were all former Democrats who switched, and Hillary Clinton worked campaigned for Richard Nixon and later for Barry Goldwater.
Right.
So if we're going to hold people to that standard, then there's a lot of trouble. I will point out I've never voted in a primary in my entire life, partly for occupational reasons.
Yeah,
and
I guess now I'm
smart that I did that.
Ronald Reagan, Mike Pence, Donald Trump, Mike Braun, do those four go together in people's minds?
Well, it's sort of like that Sesame Street song, right?
One of those things is not like the other?
Right. Mike Braun in the legislature has seemingly demonstrated his conservative bona fides, but, you know, I'll be curious to see what voters respond. I absolutely agree with John in this you know, tribal sense, and our team, your team, and it's just the fracture. And what you have here is the established conservative or established Republican Party questioning whether or not a member of the party who is elected on their team is going to be qualified because he happened to vote in Democrat primaries. I think they're legitimate questions, but I think it's kind of goofy that that's what it's coming down to. Look at the issues, look at his positions, and then make a determination. But we've gone nuts.
Should it? I mean, Joe Donnelly likes to tout his bipartisanship. Is that just what Mike Braun was showing here?
Hey, I'm just curious. Mike Braun pulled the Democrat primary ballot in 2008. Was it Obama or Hillary? I'm just curious.
They won't answer that question. But, Mike, let me ask you this, though.
Yeah.
Part of Mike Braun's explanation was that he pulled ballots all those years in what was then a blue county in Du Bois County in that period because he wanted to advance GOP interests by pulling the Democratic ballot. If you're doing it for that many years, do you buy that argument?
I do buy that argument in that part of the state. And if you look at how Democrats used to win statewide, they've won one statewide election, really, other than Joe Donnelly since 2000, or at least state offices.
Barack Obama
maybe
2008.
One.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Maybe
you're
one.
Right.
I just say state offices so I can stick to one. Okay. You're blowing up my talking point here.
It's $1.4 trillion.
But if you look at
that,
that's
right.
If you look at how Democrats were successful statewide in the past, it was because in southern Indiana there were a lot of southern Democrats who were had conservative values and always did. And then after 2008, Barack Obama changed all that. And Republicans won all the river districts, those state rep districts, including Mike Braun's, and we're able to win statewide because Republicans are doing really well in southern Indiana because these voters have flipped. Now, my theory on growing the party is we get people to vote Republican who were not voting Republican before. That's kind of what we're doing here. We're trying to make the case that, hey, you ought to be a Republican. And then when we were successful in doing that, those people move up. Then they want to run for office. Then they want to advance conservative ideals. And then we hammer them for having voted Democrat in another life.
Well, if you want to look for, real quick, somebody who, again, if this is the show devoted to giving people political cover, just go back and play the...
He's hit on our
Just go back and play the tape of that crazed liberal Rush Limbaugh, who was begging conservative Republicans in the presidential primaries here and elsewhere to take a Democratic ballot to wreak havoc.
Well, that was in 08, right? I was county chairman for two terms then.
We
had to look back, and people wanted me to go disqualify people who pulled a Democrat ballot in 08 because they were participating in this kind of conservative movement, and it was really a mess.
When Rush Limbaugh's
Expanding cold beer sales in Indiana has more of an uphill battle after a special study commission couldn't muster enough votes to recommend it.
The Alcohol Code Revision Commission voted 8-7 in favor of recommending the legislature allow convenience and grocery stores to sell cold beer for carryout, but it needed 9 votes. That issue has been a particularly contentious one this year, with liquor and grocery store lobbies teaming up to urge the commission and lawmakers to reject cold beer expansion while advocating for legalized Sunday sales. The study commission did recommend Sunday sales in an earlier meeting. Other recommendations include increased permit fees and violation costs and a 25% alcohol tax hike.
John Ketzenberger, is the commission's failure to recommend cold beer expansion despite a favorable vote, is that a death knell for the issue, at least in the 2018 session?
No, I don't think so. I think it's going to be one of the three issues probably in the General Assembly come January. And this thing's going to take more turns than the Indy 500 before it's over. And it may ultimately hit the wall. But I think that the real action, the action that matters, is going to be in the legislature. And this is going to be a distant memory by the time that's done.
Will the commission's recommendations bear a lot of weight once it comes down to voting time in the General Assembly?
For those seeking cover and looking for a reason to oppose it, they will. I agree with you. I got my talking point. And I agree with you. It's the motorsports without Delaney here. We can use sports metaphors, but that they only turn one direction. This is more like the old road course that was created for the Grand Prix, because there will be some twists and turns here. I would say never, at this point in the session, which means several weeks before it starts, really. Suggests that something will not happen or be an issue, because if we turn back the clock to a year ago right now, alcohol was not on anybody's radar, really. We'd had several sessions where that was a front burner issue. There had been coalitions formed and ad campaigns. It was sort of, let's take a breather. And then we had the Jay Rickers situation that really didn't surface until a month or more into the session. It was March.
Right.
So everybody who was saying, as I probably did a year ago, alcohol is not going to be on a big issue this year, was proven wrong. And I'm not going to make that prediction this time around.
That said, will the commission's vote here, or lack of recommendation really, be used as a cudgel against those who try to advance the cold beer expansion issue in the legislature?
Well, it could be if you look at who voted which way. So this was a commission made up of legislators and lay members of the public.
Without who were explicitly not to have ties to the current.
That's correct. Right. But had some experience in all policy. Right. Some of them did. If you look at the vote, the individuals who voted against it, Ron Alting, the Senate chairman of the Public Policy Committee, Ben Smaltz, the House chair of Public Policy, Matt Lehman, the House majority leader, all voted against it. So if you're looking, if you kind of go down, a lot of the lay members voted for cold beer. One, because they're lay members, and they can just go home and they're done, right? These legislators have to go home, and they've got to balance the interests of the local packaged liquor store against the big box store and all those interests in between.
So if you're hoping to buy cold beer next year at a grocery store or a convenience store, are you feeling a little more pessimistic these days?
I'm feeling about how I always feel, which is, we'll see.
Stock up on Saturday night.
Yeah, right.
Well, you're a Democrat. Pessimism just comes natural. It's just like a constant state of pessimism.
Hope and change. Hope and change.
The U.S. House voted this week to advance legislation that loosens gun restrictions for gun owners who cross state lines. The measure concerns what's called concealed carry reciprocity. Essentially, the legislation says if you hold a concealed carry permit for your gun in one state, every other state must honor it. Supporters compare those carry permits to driver's licenses or marriage permits, which are honored by all 50 states. All 7 Indiana House Republicans voted in favor of the bill, while both Democrats voted no. Congressman Luke Messer and Todd Rokita are now putting pressure on Democrat Joe Donnelly over whether he'll support the measure in the Senate.
Phil Johnson, Donnelly calls himself a supporter of the Second Amendment. That's part of that bipartisan thing he likes to go on. But with his reelection bid next year, is he sort of backed into a corner on this bill that his party probably doesn't want him to vote for?
I think Joe's going to do what he always does, which is consider this bill. And if it's good for Hoosiers, he's going to vote for it. And if it's not, he's going to vote against it. I think it's important to remember that in the past, Joe has supported enhanced background checks. He supported closing the gun show loophole and the terror loophole as well. I think it's worth mentioning that there's a bill in the Senate right now, I can't believe I'm saying this, a bipartisan bill in the Senate to work on or for enhanced background checks. I believe it's got conservative members, liberal members of the Senate, and that's where we need to be on this sort of issue, getting folks from both parties together to get something done.
Is Joe Donnelly backed into a corner on this bill?
I think this issue is a perfect Joe Donnelly issue. We don't need his vote. Hoosiers are going to want this because for those that have concealed carry permits, they can go to another state. They still have to abide by the laws of that state, and the concealed carry permittees in those states have to comply with. But it's kind of made for Joe Donnelly. We don't really need him, so he'll probably be there for us, and he can come home and talk about how bipartisan he is.
Well, if it's popular with Hoosiers, though, isn't that exactly what an elected official is supposed to do?
Not an election year.
To that point, will it be made easier if this one doesn't come down to the wire in the Senate?
He has an out for cover here, and let me explain what it is.
There it is.
Go broader than the gun issue. If those who say this is reciprocity is where my heart is and where my soul is, where were they when they said states shouldn't recognize other states' gay marriage licenses a few years back? Or what about those states that now have marijuana legalized? Does that mean that you toke, you know, when you go on vacation and with impunity because I'm wearing a sign that says I'm from
Colorado or
Washington State.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the people who say that this is all about purity of constitutional purity, it's only purity on this issue, not on every issue.
Oh, be careful. There are no issues that politicians do that on. Is Joe Donnelly sort of backed into a corner on this one?
This is the third time you've asked that question, and the answer I believe is no.
So.
Oh. I believe the answer is no.
You don't think he's backed into a corner?
No, I don't think so. I think that the analysis that both have actually offered here and the cover that John has uncovered again for
us. Thank you. Big picture is what I'm
all
going
all for. Shows that really, I don't think Joe Donnelly suffers any peril on this.
You talked about he'll consider whether this bill is good for Hoosiers. Is this bill good for Hoosiers?
You know, I haven't seen the details of the bill. I think what is good for Hoosiers and why I'm optimistic that there is a bill on these issues that is bipartisan in the Senate. I think Hoosiers want to see people come together and get things done and work on things bipartisanly. So if that does exist in the Senate, I think that is good for Hoosiers, and Hoosiers want to see that.
All right. Well, finally, the main gate at the governor's residence was mangled this week when a piece of machinery got caught as it worked on building a full-size basketball court on the property. Mike O'Brien, is this story really peak Indiana?
just like Eric Holcomb, he embodies all of the best things of Indiana, including putting a basketball court at the governor's residence.
To be fair, is it about time that the governor's residence of the state of Indiana had a basketball court?
It's shocking that it didn't already, and I think Evan Bayh put a basketball goal up there as well.
Careful.
There's a movable one there, but
this metaphor is no bigger than that sinkhole that developed in the middle of the IU stadium a few years ago on a football field.
Right, that's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Phil Johnson, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.